now takes over from the object and starts forwarding all the calls that it receives.
It knows that all threads that existed before it was created, but it knows that all calls that are happening onto the object are now being tracked through the mediator. So you could have had, before we installed the mediator, you could have had a whole bunch of threads executing inside the object that had called the object before the mediator was created. Tracking all of them, you transfer the state, you perform the actual hot swap operation, changing the object, and you forward all the blocked calls that happened while you were doing the state transfer. You for the rest of the kernel, change one specific object instance. Question is, how did the mediator know when it was safe to change the object? How did it know when all the existing calls on the object had terminated? What you do is, you maintain a count of the life number of threads in each generation. Detect quiescence, you advance the generation, so all the new threads that start being... No. In K42, all kernel threads are short-lived, which is basically what allows us to use this as our quiescence detection mechanism. And that's because we have, for example...
USB key.
Okay. We'll do. So you guys have got a pretty good chance. When a thread exits, its generation count... The mechanism was actually introduced originally to allow deferred object deletion. So you can say, delete this object when it's safe, and using the generation count mechanism, you know when nobody could actually be using that object anymore. It's somewhat similar to RCU in Linux, how that magical state transfer from the old object to the new object. Every object, because of the generation count overflowing...
How
do you get the generation down? Oh, it's between the two, because you just want to know when all previous threads have terminated. Well, you just need to add all the previous generation counts together.
So if you cross the way first fast enough, it never...
Hang on. You're testing my knowledge of this because...
A continual series of...
Yep. Okay, it's probably more involved than that because you can... I have definitely done a whole lot of hop slots concurrently. Transfer. All objects that are going to be hot swappable, you can do hot swaps in any process, and the kernel is just a special process in K42. Anything else? Okay. So all objects that are going to be hot swappable have to provide export and import methods. Go and implement these things. You want it to, if you want to support arbitrary changes between objects, you might need to implement. So what I've been mostly working on is dynamic update. And dynamic update uses hot swapping and extends it to allow you to apply patches on the fly to the running kernel. And the code and data that's going to be changed by an update, you need some sort of instances of state belonging to the updated unit. The invocations that were going into the update, into the old unit, so you can redirect all the invocations across to the new unit after you apply the update. And you need some form of version management, so you know what code is actually present inside your system. So after you've been... Requirements are satisfied in K42. The updatable unit is, of course, the hot swappable object, provided by something we've added called factory objects, which I'll talk about in a minute. Factory objects that provide a really primitive version management scheme. What's a factory object? It's basically an example of the factory design pattern, if you know your software construction. And it tracks and manages all the instances of the object's instance. And it allows us to ensure that after you've done an update and you've first of all, this is the picture of the system before a dynamic update is applied. You've got a well-known reference somewhere for the factory for a particular type, and that factory is tracking a set of instances. This is a simplified version of the Linux kernel module loader, which is Jeremy's. The first thing that happens is you instantiate a new factory for the updated class. The set of instances that the old factory had across the new factory. So now the new factory knows all the old instances that were existing inside the kernel. After this point, any new instantiations will automatically go to the kernel format, and you can avoid copying that data around if you're only making more. So this is all pretty block pictures. We've actually applied them dynamically. The first one was new kernel API for a partition memory region. So basically that's adding a new kind of memory region to the K42 kernel and a new interface to use it. The kernel's memory pool and crash the kernel. So this implemented a new version of the class that adds that stuff, compiled it, loaded for the file cache manager, the FCM code. There's a method on the FCM, it's called unmap page, which is called, strangely enough, to unmap a page. It turns out that unmap page didn't check when Plato does a dynamic update, and that demonstrates using the factory mechanism because it affects every... What do we still have to do here? Performance of a popping was originally designed for adaptability and customizability, where you're looking at, for example, changing a particular FCM to a different version at a time. In a dynamic update, you're looking at changing all the FCM objects in the kernel. It actually changes the library code. And those don't take mechanism in application code, but we'd need to do it inside every address. These as to, from the time you start the update, when it's going to be applied. So we need to add completion notification, and I've got some ideas about doing lazy updating. When you finally, the biggest drawback of this whole thing at the moment, and we actually found when going through K42 looking for some sort of mechanism to locate, and not only for a given object, locate all the potential callers of that object and atomically hot swap that set as a whole. So there's going to be a bit of fiddling around with the compiler there to make it play nicely. Anything we want to the member data, because of those transfer functions, and you can only do a direct copy if the member data is the same. But we can support arbitrary changes to member data by not doing the copy, by using API calls, especially the blocking IO and that kind of stuff is implemented at user level, to apply a patch, which at user level is going to be changing the library, or you need to restart the process. And if you restart the process, okay, the system as a whole hasn't been restarted, but whatever services that process was providing have gone away for a period of time while you've restarted it, and clients of the process will be interested to look at it. Do you know how it does that? What happens if the application tries to write... sounds very interesting. I have to look at it more. So, related work. Solaris has this thing called live upgrade. A lot of stuff out at user level in components, or if you're using a microkernel, you can restart in vitrobes. The way they work is they allow an intercept. You can say, this particular kernel function, I want to add this code that executes at the beginning of it, or I want to replace that function with this new implementation. So that allows you some level of anybody else who's already executing the function and they're still executing the old code. There's no attempt to do that at all because you're only changing individual functions. So it's overhead in terms of the mechanisms. You need to have objects, you need to have fine-grained decomposition. But on the other hand, you can change data structures. And finally, there's this thing called Nooks. It monitors all calls going into the device driver. So it knows the internal state of the same state inside the driver by making calls on the device driver. Pretends to be the device driver while the new driver is getting loaded, and then the shadow can reconstruct the state in the new driver. The reason this can work is because for device drivers, you only have a limited number of APIs. You have sound write. You'd be looking at a lot more performance overhead than just having shadows on device drivers. Could we transfer any of this stuff from K42 to Linux? Related within objects, so if you know that nobody's calling an object, it's safe to change that object's data because nobody can get around the object interface. It works because there's a uniform mechanism for invoking an object through the object translation table, a VFS layer. In the file system area, to invoke all functions within a file system module. New bit of code, then you've got a new version of the file system. We just have to solve all the other little problems, like making sure we do it safely. Also, a file system module would be a compelling example because it's a real code within a file system, or if you want to apply bug fix to a file system, and then if that works out, we could start looking at putting some sort of more... going back to our list of requirements, if we wanted to do this in the Linux kernel, what would we have? The updatable unit would be a file system module. Detecting safe point quiescence is obviously an open issue, although I've got some ideas about that, if it doesn't do that already. State transfer, use systems data structures to the cache, and then putting the rest into a cache, and then have the new file system reread them, then you're done. Redirect invocations by using all those function pointers in the VFS structure, and we could quite easily add version numbers to modules. How does threads that existed have terminated, so we know when the object must be safe? How can we do module? Not necessarily when they are calling the module, so every open file, I believe, is. The first one is, after you've interposed the mediator, when you want to see if it's safe to change a module, you walk through the stack of every kernel thread inside the kernel, looking at their stack, when you need to look at all their stacks to find out if anybody's executing inside the module. However, it'd be ugly. The other option, function, inside a module that can be called, at the beginning of the function, the first thing you do is you increment an invocation count, and when that function returns out of the module, you decrement it. The drawback...
module that just counts the calls and passes.
How do you do that, though? If you want to put the mediator in, that would be a way to avoid modifying all the code. Yeah, that's true. We'll probably have the same overhead too. Sorry? But we can probably work out something that will work here, I think, until it unblocks. In K42, the kernel, it's possible to mark a user-level program with explicit update points. So if you've got a main loop in the program, you might say at the beginning of the loop, right now is safe to update, to apply an update, this is a safe point, and then we could put update points in there. That's basically. In conclusion, our system can apply integral performance impact on K42. However, there's a question of what is the overhead imposed on K42 by having all these nice mechanisms present, like the object translation table, and it's better than K42. So there's also trade-offs involved. Something like the object translation table.
I think you'd find the state code is then going to be tested, which means it will never work.
That's true.
Especially if you change the file system point update to reflect the new data structures.
Well, I'm hoping that with the file system, the state, the only...
Do you think this can help the hot swap, for example, the code that does signature hot swap?
In this mechanism? So K42 has low-level exception handling code, like interrupt handling. No, at some point you're going to have to reboot. No, generally in updates you're looking at you know, changing one implementation to a completely different implementation.
Structures, so they effectively share data structures between the old and new mutations because any mutex detected would already be protected.
Yep.
And then later on removing the old one once it's no longer referenced.
Or you could do it like that. The end of any data structures, and then the old code might still sort of work while you...
Objects that have, say, got pointers to other objects, for instance. No, I mean,
objects don't have pointers to other objects. They only have references through the object translation table. And as long as the...
Everything goes to the translation table. So
yep. A certain feature. And with C++, obviously, there's a steep learning curve to knowing how particular constructs turn out into code. I would say that there's a much steeper learning curve to provide you some nice language features to do that automatically.
So how well does that actually work in reality? For example, do you end up having to, when updating, basically go through every incremental version, or can you actually reasonably expect to do jumps in version?
Two of this object, and I know what version number one's internal format was.
No,
well, if they don't support the same intermediate format, it will just not allow you to apply the updates you need to apply. You could do that.
So it's really up to the new objects, how far back to go.
Yes, but it's also up to the old object in what export formats it supports. If the old object supports a nice, really generic... question is, why would you bother doing it this way? This seems to add a lot of overhead for object migration when Yeah, that's true. Actually, if it's not heterogeneous, you could use this.
You can make a generic patch as long as the intermediate formats are the same for the state transfer. So it just needs this being used is you've got somebody in their OS.
Yeah,
Is it using
Linux
and
Vice drivers? Yeah. Do you have to modify them a lot to get them going? Because as they are, they can be hot swappers, I'm sure.
No, they're not hot swappers. Device drivers and some other stuff that K42 uses. And we don't have the time or patience to implement a whole store of device drivers and other things. You could. I mean, if you implemented an object that had the device driver API, and you can implement that object internally however you like, so you can easily... Maybe. You could... Problem of, what does the... What's the user-side interface to the... I don't know enough about the Linux code in K42 to be able to say whether it would work or not.
It's not even necessarily good with Linux code. You could probably do it something like that, assuming that you only
need a device. We're about to lose, your device is about to be put to sleep. If it supports
all of these guys stuff now can be turned off, removed and stuff.
Best idea to solving that problem.
Can you journal the kernel so you just roll it back to the moment we reverse the kernel space and then restart it with a new driver?
Yeah, sorry, what does that mean exactly?
So,
if the driver's gone and touched the device. Yeah, okay, so we could get them before they block, I guess. They could have been hot-swapped, so how do you know that the state of the module, or the state of...
If you know that this is a category in a busy section, and in your critical path, then you let it keep running until it gets out of
there. Yeah, no, but the problem is, like, with suspend, that they rely on the state.
Yeah, so we would use that sort
of... ...view afterwards and ask you about it. How we go for time, yeah?
So then you actually import that object to the new version so that when you go to unblock, you can then keep working with that state information. So the stack becomes unimportant because...
So you get two versions, you're saying you get two versions of the state, and the guy that was blocked on the stack, it's the format of any data structures that it might access.
But you know, people were blocking because there's only a finite number of places you could have blocked, and so you know, anybody who's blocking and doing this is how I can continue afterwards.
Yeah, okay. Okay.
And then restart the system should retry the call. If it's in this state, it's not interrupted, but everything else should.
Oh, you're about to be swapped out. Can you just finish your business? And then it's the thread would, even if it was blocked, once it finished, it would check the flag and say, oh, hang on, I have to die now. And it would basically...
So the module needs to check this.
Plus, the swap itself is what they replace a module that's currently blocking interrupted.
Not sure I'm following you. If it's uninterruptible, we have a problem. We just don't want to have to do that.
Well, that's the point of interrupt. So that was
even if you have to wait 10 seconds to acquire hot swap, that's still
like... What's happening? If it's in an interruptible sleep, we simply interrupt it and do the thing. If it's uninterruptible, we say, well, let's try again in a second. And we let other calls go on, because we don't want to block other calls while we wait for this sleep to finish. And then try again. To service a timer interrupt or something, if you need to service a device interrupt, and you don't do it for 5 seconds... You've got one! Ah! Okay, who else? I don't know. If
for some reason it's waiting on vision, it's not going to happen. Ordinarily, you don't care.
Thanks, Randy.
Yeah.
Talking
enunciate that fine. Signal the other side, your effector next door. I suspect there'll be people sort of congregating around here who want to sort of drift over and apply the packet. Thanks again.
What about some sort of RCU type thing?
Well, in the state, you've got two versions of it.
Mm.
They get inconsistent.
But
what if the people that are accessing the old version, like what if there's a lock and somebody locks the new version and somebody locks the old version and they both think
okay,
they've got the lock?
Yeah. Oh, you've got to check for
pretty intense screening. It used to be called Kichawa, which was just like what everybody in the group could agree on. And it doesn't seem...
42 was the checkers going, oh, wait, the kernel, oh, shit.
It might be, I don't know.
Yeah, the last time I heard anything about QNX was about 4 years ago when this software has actually no way of figuring that out.
The problem I see with that, you open it up and you do a bunch of articles that say, set the sampling rate to this number of channels.
It's able to leave its own state sitting in the software bus. I mean,
either that or it has to be like a packet-driven thing where every request says, play this at this sample rate with this number of channels.
Yeah, I don't think it's necessary to do that. Find it. So I guess if you've just got a bucket where you always put your state information in the cart, that process, and the applications using it, providing they didn't cause the crash, don't even know about it. 4 years ago, they went from a 32K microkernel to a 64K microkernel. And that basically, the whole 32K microkernel series used the same binary image of the microkernel, like it was hand-coded in an assembler and just didn't have to.
I guess it also depends on the CPU, like
Thank you.